Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sequoia, who is here to speak with us this afternoon about the joys of cooking in the monastery kitchen. Welcome, Sequoia.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, good topic, huh?
It's a great topic. You know, just as you said it, this big smile came across my face.
Me too. That's how I knew it was a good topic.
I couldn't suppress it. It was right there.
So, you know, one of the things that inspired it, at least for me, was so we recently had a Seasons of Joy summer retreat. And as I think we've talked about in several forums, the Seasons of Joy retreats are, I mean, they're amazing for so many reasons. And one of them, the fabulous practices we all get to do is working meditation, and we get to really care for the property. And I think there are, I think, coming out in the newsletter soon will be some photos and that sort of thing showing what were some of the activities we got to participate in. And one of the things we realized in that was how much amazing practice and joyful opportunity there is in participating in the kitchen. I mean, on retreat, but off retreat as well. And that it's just such an interesting practice because it's sort of like a sand mandala in the sense that there isn't really, I mean, in a sense, there's always something to show for it, and yet there never is because it's just constantly being created and going away, being created and going away. And since you have a huge hand in orchestrating what happens in the monastery kitchen, we thought it would be fun to hear from you about your experience of participating in that way.
That's great. I love that image of the sand mandala.
Yeah.
You know, I've often thought it would be cool if we could have an overhead photo of what's going on in the kitchen.
As, yes.
You know, as the dance is being done, as the mandala is being created, and as you say, you know, it comes into form and then it's, we eat it.
Quickly. It comes into form, and a few minutes later.
But, you know, as far as I can see, the content may be a little different, but it's the same process we're all participating in working meditation and these retreats. I mean, some people are out on the property doing, you know, roads, and you know, some people are in the garden, some people are in the kitchen, and some things look like they have a longer lasting life than others, but in truth we're just all moving stuff around.
and
it's all the same thing. We're just all moving stuff around, and the joy of it is that we get to be putting our attention on the divine, on life, on practice, as we do this other thing. And in the kitchen, it just happens to be cooking and moving food around and preparing it for folks.
God, what a beautiful point, that we get to put our attention on the divine. We could say we get to practice having our attention in the present moment as we go about whatever activity life is asking us to participate in.
Yes. Just learning, and the kitchen seems to be a good place for it, just learning to take none of it personally.
Yeah.
And to just be available to, you know, what's next. And working in the kitchen, it just seems to be one of those areas that I really can have a connection with life. I can hear it saying, you know, what about those beans over there?
Uh-huh.
And it's just a joy to just get out of the way and be there and participate with others.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's the best part.
It is. And I love that description of, so kind of, especially when you're in a position like you're often in, so, you know, there are a lot of meals and a lot of people and, you know, great quantities of everything, right? And a number of things going on at the same time, a number of people doing a number of different things. You know, we have at the monastery kitchen a large sort of industrial oven and stove that has 6 burners, and then a second stove that has 4 burners. And it's not completely unusual for all of those to have something cooking on them.
Yes.
Right? So a lot of chances. It would be impossible, really, to pull it off looking to condition mind, wouldn't it?
Oh, I've tried.
It just doesn't go well, does it?
In the beginning of practice, I just, you know, to just recall all those conditioned mind experiments that just resulted in disaster. It is. You really have to give it over to life. And it's just there. So happy to be the support and also so happy to cook.
Yes.
As far as I can tell, life. Happy to do everything.
Exactly. And you know what I just saw in that is when you said, you know, those experiments, you know, with conditioning and what it results in my experience, is burned granola and beans that are burnt solid to the bottom of the pan and, you know, all those places. And it's funny because, in a way, those things are a gift because what they show us is, aha, that's not going to work. It's never going to work to do it from conditioned mind in the same way that suffering is a gift. So that isn't working. So I might as well try this turning it over to life thing.
Yes. And, you know, what I love about the kitchen is it doesn't work, and it's not something that you can go off of conditioning and hide.
That's right.
It's like everybody can see, oh, my gosh, that didn't work.
Yes, they can see it. They can smell it.
And, you know, you just learn. You learn a lot about just stepping forward and getting support.
Yes.
And humility and being a human. And, you know, I love that part of it.
Yes, me too. Humility was the word that was coming up for me as well. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's such a tangible experience that what I'm doing is of service and has an impact on everyone. And so I really want it. I want, to the best of my ability, I want to practice having it come from that place of life, of love, of presence.
Boy, it is so much you will do for the love of others, isn't it?
It is.
It is. Because I think I've also come from the place of trying to do it to look good from the ego place.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's successful, that doesn't work. You know, there's just no joy in it.
Nope.
And truly, the joy comes in just coming from an act of love.
Yeah.
And sharing that.
Yeah.
And
Yes, because even if it, quote, works, as you say, you know, maybe the meal gets on the table and nothing gets burned, but we can guess Sequoia's not happy in that. And from the perspective of practice, no one wants that. No one wants Sequoia as a metaphor for any piece of life to be left out of the equation. And so that doesn't work. You know, even if the meal got on the table, it didn't work because there wasn't compassion for all. And compassion for all is what we're practicing.
Absolutely. Oh, there's just so much about the kitchen. There's just so much. It is. I mean, you think about food being transformed in the kitchen. People are transformed in the kitchen.
Yes.
And that's one of the most joyful things, too, that I just love it was when people are in the kitchen, like in the Seasons of Joy retreat, we had a bunch of folks there for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And then during this retreat, we have folks there that are in the kitchen that have been training for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a joy to be practicing in both places.
Yeah, to be able to work alongside folks who have been training in the kitchen for a long time, and also to have the experience of, I mean, in my experience, it's just such a pleasure to be working with someone who doesn't already know all of it, right? Because we get to experience it fresh again.
It is that beginner's mind thing, and it's just, it's so wonderful. So let's start with, you know, how to peel a potato, and right. You know, it's the best.
It is the best, because then for me, often I'm reminded, oh right, I forgot to actually peel the potatoes, right? Maybe I peeled the potatoes, but am I peeling the potatoes, right? Am I actually being there, having the experience, the gift of feeling that, what it feels like in the peeler in my hand and the getting to actually have the experience?
Yes. And so often folks stepping into the kitchen for the new time, for the first time, just take you right back to that place if you've slipped out of it. It's like, oh, yes, this is what we're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love that image that you started with of if we could have an aerial photo. And I just had a vision of, like, you know, one of those where you take a video and then you speed it up.
Uh-huh.
Right? You play it back, sped up, because it's such an amazing venue for expanded awareness. Because you watch.
It is.
I mean, it's a beautiful, like, relatively large kitchen, but the number of people who can work in there in silence, none of that, right? And yet it works. So that practice of expanded awareness of, I'm completely focused on what I'm doing, I'm keeping custody of the eyes, I'm not watching other folks, but in that expanded awareness, I'm completely aware of needing to step a little bit to one side because someone's going to the fridge, and then, I mean, it's such a beautiful dance.
Yes, just completely aware of the dance and all the other beings there and the food. And, you know, folks just can't imagine being in a kitchen, a silent kitchen, and getting all of that done until they've experienced it. And it is a great gift of practice. And probably the food tastes a lot better for the gift of doing it in silence.
It does to me. So funny. And then getting to eat it in silence. Again, same principle, right? Get to actually have the experience of it.
Yes.
Well, here we are at the top of the hour. Well, that happened quickly.
Now we could just go on.
Exactly. Anything else you wanted to add before we end?
I just want to invite everyone to come dance with us. On retreat, and, you know, whether it's in the kitchen or in the hall or wherever it is, it's just so wonderful to have folks come.
That's a great point. And that everyone on the retreat, whatever they're doing, is participating in that dance.
They absolutely are. I mean, even if folks never step into the kitchen ever, their work, their transformation, their practice is completely affecting the kitchen crew as well.
So beautiful. Well, deep, deep gusho, Sequoia, for the
thank
service
you,
that
Jen.
You provide there. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Sequoia. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. Sequoia could have stayed longer, you know, but she has to go cook.
Yes.
Isn't that good?
I'm sure she does.
Yeah,
she's in
there.
Soon.
That's right, making sure people have the next meal.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That conversation took me right back there. To being in the
I know. Me too.
Meal cleanups. Yes. Dishes.
Yeah.
Great.
And that dance, you know, that all of that happens with people keeping custody of the eyes, being completely respectful. It's intuitive communication. And it's just...
Yes.
It all works.
Yes, it does, and it's fun.
And it's fun, yeah, it really is. I know that. I realize that to most people that just sounds insane, but it actually is fun. And it's fun when we get past the voices that want to be on us about how inept we are, how what somebody else is doing wrong, or that shouldn't be that way, or why are you telling me how to peel a potato, for God's sake? I've been peeling potatoes for decades. You know, when we get past all of that nonsense, and which is true anywhere, right? If we really were dancing, you know, there's a whole group of people dancing, and the same thing is going to happen. And the only people who are having a good time are the people who aren't in their heads listening to complaining, whining, judgmental, hateful voices, right? So
yes, yeah. yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I have announcements here.
All right. What are they?
Okay. The practice weekend at the monastery, June 23rd through June 25th, offers an opportunity to get away from the daily routine and deepen support for awareness practice. From Friday evening group with the guide to Sunday morning group with the community, participants enjoy practice activities and guidance in the peace and beauty of the monastery grounds.
Mm-hmm. It's the truth.
Yes. The There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, June 30th through July 7th, offers an opportunity to see directly how we are rejected and punished by the voices of self-hate and to discover how to let that go. This work is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do.
More truth. And you know, we have some brave souls who are there listening to you do that description as they are doing that retreat right now. How exciting
Great.
Is that?
That's pretty exciting. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mornings with the Mentor is a group coaching program in which participants will create recordings with the mentor to support intentions for the day and for life. Don't miss the opportunity to spend time each morning with someone who loves you unconditionally. The 4-week coaching program starts June 28th. And Reflective Listening Buddies is a powerful weekly support for conscious, compassionate awareness, requiring participants to show up to practice being present. The next quarter begins July 15th.
You know, Michael, it's hard to know. I'm listening to those things, and it's hard to know which of those is a greater gift to the world. You know, doing a
yeah.
There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat and getting beyond self-hate as quickly and efficiently as we can, what a gift. Mornings with the Mentor, you know, starting out the day in conscious, compassionate awareness and then going out into the world, what a contribution. Learning the skills of reflective listening and being able to be a present, just a mirror for somebody else. That's again, you know, the whole family is going to be grateful that somebody is doing that. And then out from there, right, coworkers and people in stores and everybody to be able to just simply be present, right, present to somebody, really
yeah.
listening to them and hearing them. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Hard to know. Might as well do them all.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I think that's best.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show by pressing *6 and then 1. That will put you in the queue. And a 5-minute conversation that is focused on one topic is great.
It's a very good thing, isn't it?
Yes,
all right, here we go. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oops.
First caller, are you there?
This is Beth. Can
oh,
you hear me?
Beth? Yeah. There you are. All right, what's going
yes.
on?
Well, first of all, bit of shock. Never been first.
I know. You know, that was my first thought. No, Beth's always last. She's always the last
exactly.
one on the show,
it
right?
The last,
yeah.
5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, good. This is good. This is good. We've got a whole new thing going on here. All right. What's happening?
Okay. Well, last week I tried to call, and you talked 3 times about exactly what I wanted to talk about. This time I'd like to look at kind of my morning practice.
Uh-huh.
I've been kind of keeping track of the days. physically, it's getting a lot more challenging.
Mm.
And every morning I wake up into this deep funk, every morning. And when I go into my routine, I hit the recording button or the listening button, and it usually takes about a good hour, and then I can find some equilibrium.
Uh-huh.
And then the other mornings, it could be weeks before I remember.
Now,
what's
the difference? What happens there, Beth?
A decision. I start thinking about my day and kind of what's required.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to I just get up and I do.
Uh-huh. As compared to you just reach over and grab that recorder.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've been trying to, the other part of the day is kind of like the phone is my best friend and my worst enemy.
Yes, I bet many of us could agree with you on that. Yes. Uh-huh. Say more.
So it's got my recording and listening device on it. It's got really mindful things on it. I've got a water reminder that goes every 15 minutes that I've combined with a couple of other things just to, like, pull my head up and look around.
Stop. Stop, take a breath, have a drink of water, look around, check out the sky, that sort of thing. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that's
very
been
good.
Incredibly useful.
Yeah.
But I also have distractions on the phone, and those are kind of my enemy in the evening. So in order to kind of like give myself some parenting, I'm not keeping my phone upstairs.
Uh-huh.
So
you're like the gal who locks it. We have a gal who locks her phone in the car at night. So she has to get up and go out and unlock the car. That kind of discipline. Yeah, that's very good.
And then what's happening there is that it's giving me too much decision time in the morning to go and get it.
Uh-huh.
And in that decision time, then something will come up. Oh, you forgot. And did you remember? And do you have your stuff?
And so the discipline there is, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
That's the parenting, right? So I want ice cream for breakfast. No, we're not doing that. Right? In that same way, ice cream for breakfast with a little kid, that would be pretty clear. But me remembering and maybe I need to make some notes about what I forgot and that's also, no, we're not doing that.
I don't like routines. I don't have
ego doesn't like routines. Ego doesn't like schedules, doesn't like routines, doesn't like anybody messing with its ability to mess with us.
But 15 years later, my habits are my best friend.
Yes. The good habits.
The good habits.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Exactly so. Yeah, and that's why the parenting image is a really good one, because ego is like the bad seed, you know. It's the little kid from hell, right?
Yeah.
Because there's nothing cute or charming about it. It can be cute and charming, right? If you're giving it everything it wants, If you're in service to it, then, yeah, it can be kind of cute and charming. But as soon as you say no to it.
Or if you get it, then it's like, you shouldn't have had that milkshake.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like it really talks me into wanting, you know, the milkshake. It's fine. It's almost your birthday. And then after the milkshake, it's, you know, it's an extra 10 pounds. There's no nutrients in it.
Yeah,
so it does both.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And so in recognizing that, that's where we draw the line, right?
Yeah,
and for me, it's really helpful if it's very clear. So I'm sure you've heard me say this, but mine is I will never entertain any assessment of how I'm feeling until after I've had tea.
Ha. In drinking a cup of tea, I stopped the war.
Say that again, Beth?
It's a Chinese quote that I've used. Is in drinking a Zen Japanese, drinking a cup of tea, I stopped the war.
Yes. Yes, exactly so. Yeah. Yes, that's very good. And so it's that kind of simple. It's not a big negotiation. You know, I don't have to get up every morning and wonder what my decision is going to be today. That's how we do it. So I would offer that to you. Just nothing happens. Nothing. And this is part of trusting life. You know, I don't even need to write down that thing that I remembered. Okay, I'll remember it afterwards. I'll remember it after. Yeah, after I do my recording and listening. I'll remember that thing.
Don't take
it'll
so
be
seriously.
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's it. There's nothing because I know I can hear the conviction in you. You know what happens when you come to center first thing in the morning and what happens when you don't. So there's no mystery about who's who and what's what and what's at stake. So it's just no. You know, if the rest of it, maybe you get talked into a milkshake at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, we'll deal with that later. But right now, I am going to start the day in the place that I want to live my life. That's my commitment. If I can't or won't make that small commitment, then I don't have a lot of hope for the rest of the commitments that I would need to make to have the life I choose.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because without that first one, there's no hope for the other
one. That's right. We have to make a decision that we are not going to be jerked around by the voices in conditioned mind. We have to take responsibility for our lives. If we don't, which again is like raising children, you know, if every other interaction, if they wear you down or what you give in, you know, you're tired, you're stressed, you don't feel like arguing with them. I mean, this is an invitation to a life of misery. But if you show up regardless and set the tone and keep the commitment, then everything going forward really does become quite easy. All right, my dear.
Thank you.
Let me know how it goes.
Thank you, Sherry.
Who knows? Who knows, Beth? Maybe next time you'll be the middle call. We have to keep this experiment going. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. Life keeps us on our toes, doesn't it, Sherry?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, it's Mark from Chicago. Hi, Sherry and Michael.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
How are you doing?
Doing really good. It's nice to talk to you after seeing you at the retreat. That was just really great, that retreat on fear.
Uh-huh. That was a good time, wasn't it?
Yeah, in fact, I had a real opportunity to practice some of that. So one of the things I wanted to do when I came home, one of the commitments I made was, you know, I mentioned that I've had this thing with animals. I can't give an animal a shot. My wife has to do it. Anytime I see an animal, it has a problem. You know, it really sends me into a cycle. So I made a commitment that the next time something happened, I was going to just be there, no matter what it felt mm-hmm. like, and just watch and see. And so it wasn't 4 or 5 days later, we had a coyote kill our pet turkey. And normally that would be like, I wouldn't even go out of the house. You know, I would dig the hole so my wife could bury the thing, but I wouldn't even go out of the house. And I said, nope, I'm going to be a full participant in this, and I'm going to just watch what happens. And so I went out and, you know, helped her, you know, carry him to the hole and bury him. And I looked and I just, you know, watched what really happened with myself. And one of the things that I saw was that the conversation that I wanted to have in my head, that I normally have in my head, that I should say conditioning wants me to have in my head, takes mm-hmm. me away from having the actual experience of grief. So my wife cried, you know, she cried. She says, you know, he was a bad bird, but, you know, he was a pet. We loved him.
He was, you know, he was our bad bird.
He was our bad bird, exactly. And I did not, you know, I didn't have that experience. All the experience I have is all in my head. It's not in my heart. You know, it's not any, I lose the sense of connection with this animal that we've had for 4 years and all kinds of crazy experiences that we've had with him. And so it was helpful to see that, and it was helpful to see that I could be there, you know, that I could look at this stuff and not go away and participate.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing that it helped me see was that part of what takes me away is that an incident like this disrupts what I think should be the plan. So things aren't going according to the plan when a really disruptive thing like this comes into my life. Because, of course, you've got to deal with this. You know, it's like having a fire or whatever. You just, no matter what else you thought you were going to do, you're going to drop that and take care of this. And so that's a recurring theme for me, is that I love lists.
Mark? Michael? Uh-oh.
Yeah. Mark, you still there? Mark? I see he's still visible there.
Sound like he's
here. Yeah, I heard love lists, and then that was it.
That was it.
Mark?
Yeah.
Mark, are you
and
there?
I sensed there was more. Mark?
Yes.
Well, we'll see if we can get him back, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to ask him to hang up. Mark, if you can hear this, why don't you hang up and then call back in. I'm going to disconnect him here.
Okay.
And we'll try that again.
Okay,
Sherry, let's go to the next caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Michael from North Carolina. A few weeks ago.
Michael.
Hi. Hi there. A few weeks ago, you told me I should be doing the 30-day retreat that's in the back of Making a Change for Good.
I hope I didn't say should, but it is a good idea.
You probably didn't. You probably
didn't. Okay,
I was,
okay.
I'm almost certain that you would have said something like that. and I started doing it. I'm not here to tell you I shouldn't have done it. I'm here to, you know. I started doing it, and I would write down in my notebook the day of the month and the day number that I was on in the sequence. And I discovered that after about 40 days, I'd gotten to day 17 or something like that. And
very good.
Well, yeah, okay. And I didn't it seemed to work. You know, it meant that I could jump right back in and pick up where I left off. Then day 18 told me that I should, the assignment was to consider the different parts of myself and sub-personalities and be aware of areas in my life where I am not getting enough kindness and give myself kindness in one of those areas and just pick one. And that one totally stopped me. I don't even know what it is I don't get about it, but I couldn't take the first step. I mean, what does it even mean? What do I mean I'm not getting enough kindness? How do I give kindness when I, do I know that I'm not getting kindness somewhere? Probably, but it doesn't seem like I do.
Does it feel as if you have all the kindness you need in every aspect of your life? Is that what you're saying?
No, I definitely would not say that. Being unaware of that is part of a strategy of not feeling how horrible it feels. But it was surprising. This is the time. It was that day. It was day 18 that it came up. Everything else, I could kind of follow the instructions, and I thought they were helpful. And then this one was. It's hard for me to follow it. I'm not sure if it's that I don't know where I'm not getting kindness, or if that means how do I give myself kindness. Usually, I can answer that because it's the kind of, I go through this to other people too. I tell them about it. What if there was somebody that you cared for and they were having this kind of problem? What would you say to them? Well, say that to yourself. And it seems to work really well. And here it's like I can't even get it on the map. It seems strange to me.
So, okay, let me catch up. So, you know how to do that process. You've done that. So you can think, well, if a loved one were in that situation, I would say to them da 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 da, and you can feel in you that feels kind.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah? I'm not following where the breakdown is.
Oh, gee. Well, I was afraid of that. No, I wasn't. I'm narrowing it down, I think. Is there an area? Well, I don't feel like I feel... I don't feel kindness in an area or lack of kindness in an area. Sometimes people are kind to me, and that's great, because they're good people. But it doesn't seem like there's an area that's neglected or an area that feels more neglected. Just maybe I feel neglected in general in terms of kindness.
Well,
then
that kind of opens things up, doesn't it? So if you said to me, Sherry, you know, I think it would be really helpful for you to begin to work on your nutrition. So look to see an area where you're not getting for yourself the kind of nutrition that you need. And I said, well, I don't get the kind of nutrition that I need anywhere. So
yeah.
Then you would probably say to me, well, then, you know, pick a meal, pick a situation. You know, you want to start with breakfast because that's kind of a smaller meal for some people. And let's focus on that. So how can you get more of the nutrition that you need into your breakfast? And then just build from there. So now, you know, 6 months later, I'm up to lunch, or I'm seeing how I could add this or that or something else, because now it's in my awareness. Now that's something that I'm focusing on. I'm bringing conscious awareness to that.
Yeah, certainly does seem like it would work with nutrition. Yeah.
And but not with kindness.
Well, I'm sure this is me doing all kinds of somersaults not to get the point. I mean, not to understand it. I get the point, but there's only so much. There's only so far that you can go with this. It's only a phone conversation. This would give me another increment. I can work on that. I mean, I can pound on this a little while. Okay, it's like nutrition.
And just kindness. Make that your koan. Kindness. You know, you wake up. Do you have a recording and listening practice?
I need to develop one. I understand it to a great degree. I have in my notebook some writing with the other hand, with conversations,
no.
And that seemed pretty.
No.
That seemed to work somewhat. Okay. What's the source of the technique there? Because I get some idea. I've heard you talk about it, but
well,
the two ends of recording and.
You don't have to leap to that yet. We can do that later in the next conversation. But just start out with, at the end of the day, you make a recording about all of the kindnesses that you experienced. Now, when you interact with somebody, you're looking for kindness. Do they smile at you? Do they kind of have a twinkle in their eye? Do they give you a compliment? Do they thank you? How about you when you have an interaction with somebody? Do you thank them? Do you express your appreciation? Do you smile? So expanding the definition of kindness. So what is kindness, and where am I seeing it around me? See, I think I experience it as a great kindness to me that the birds sing so beautifully everywhere I am. I think that's incredibly kind of them. Now, am I delusional enough to think that they're doing it because of me? No, but I don't know that they're not. So I prefer to see it as a kindness. And there's tremendous kindness around us all the time if we consider it that way. It's very hot where I am right now. And so to stand under a tree, the shade feels very, very kind. Okay. It feels kind to me that I experience great kindness that Michael shows up every week and does what he does, and that I get to talk with people like you, and we get to explore practice together. I see great kindness. I think we're helping the world be a more kind place because of our focus on kindness and compassion and gratitude and generosity. So maybe that. Let it be a koan. At the end of the day, you make a recording about that. In the morning, listen to that recording and just see what drops in for you about kindness. You know, how are you going to look for it today? Or what are you going to be doing today that might be an opportunity to bring a little kindness into the interaction? How would you do that? How do you recognize kindness in other people? And how do you think they recognize kindness in you? Like that. Okay? Add the recordings, listen to them, make them, listen to them. Pretty soon, kindness becomes sort of your whole, the water you're swimming in.
Yeah, okay. I'll accept that.
Give it a go?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I will give it a go.
All right. And then you'll report back, right?
You bet. Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for this kindness.
Thank you. It's been a joy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Michael. Sherry, I really enjoyed that conversation, especially it felt like you know, we're a scientist exploring this question of what is kindness, like
yes.
a koan. It's great.
Yes. Yeah. What does it feel like? What does it smell like and taste like? What does it look like? What does it, what, yeah, when I see it, when I hear it, when I, how do I know it? You know, on Project Joy the other day, I think that this happened already, there was the quote about, it's not what we see, it's what makes seeing happen. It's, you know, that's not what it said at all. Ashwini will probably text me what it is. It's from the Upanishad. But it's that. And I went to the birds. You know, it's not the birds singing that I'm in pursuit of. It's what makes the birds sing. It's what enables hearing. It's what is that? That
yes.
right? That's what we're in pursuit of. Right? And that's what kindness is, right? What is kindness? What does it feel like? How do we know it?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What you're saying reminds me of what you've said before, which I hear as, it's not the specific insight that I'm looking for. It's the process of, you know, seeing those insights as they come through, of being in
yes.
that place of awareness.
Yes. Yes. And what insights? Now, I just got a text from Ashwini. Said,
yeah.
"Yes, that's it. It's what animates us, right? That's what is the kindness, and that's what feels the kindness. That's what is the compassion, and that's what feels the compassion. That's what knows the compassion.
Yeah.
That,
yeah,
yeah. Mm.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, it is."
Sherry, we, from our recording and listening program, back to talk with more callers.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that we could live in a conversation about what is true, what is real, what is arising in life in the moment, instead of with the voices of karmic conditioning. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We now have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report, finding refuge in my own voice, strengthening the awareness of the mentor, and experiencing the 6 weeks as transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply go to livingcompassion.org. Click on Practice to find 2017 programs, and then recording and listening training. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence this year with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air.
Well, that was, do you think Michael now thinks that we did that intentionally so, because he should sign up for that? That was good, wasn't
well,
it?
Yeah.
We didn't do that,
yeah.
Other Michael. We didn't do that intentionally. All right. Thank you, this Michael. Did you ever
yes,
find Mark?
Sure. Well, I have a number here with the same area code. And so I was thinking
well,
we would try that.
Let's see if Mark.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's try that. Okay. Mark, is that you?
Yay, it's me.
Okay, so
yes,
the last we heard from you, that's why you love lists.
Yes, and that's I will stop there and I'd like to hear your thoughts on, you know, the experiment that I ran first of all to just decide to do it even though it was really uncomfortable and then what I saw.
Yeah. Well, and of course, I mean, so you know the old, supposedly it's a Chinese curse, may you be born in a happy time. And what that leads to, of course, is that it's the facing these difficulties that actually gives us the life that is our opportunity as human beings. So on the one hand, I hope nothing like that ever happens to you again. If it does, because for most of us, anyway, we have regular opportunities to face our karma. And so when that happens for you, to approach it in the same way. And I don't know if you heard the Project Joy this morning. Was it this morning?
No, I missed this one.
Okay, well, you might enjoy listening to the recording because the fellow was talking about the way he phrased it was, I decided just to sit down and watch what self-hate did to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that kind of attitude of mind of this is the workshop. I've suffered over this all my life. I want to be here for it, and I want to experience it fully. Because as you said, you know, you're there. Yes, you could look at him. You could be there with your wife, but there's still a sense of being separate from it. And so to
right.
stay with it until you reach I don't want to say what your experience is going to be. Whatever feels like you have found a place of non-separation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the things that I could see going through my head were, well, how come I'm not crying? You know, I should be crying. And then if I had cried, I would say, well, I probably look stupid crying because I'm not doing it right, you know.
Right.
And so the whole experience of thinking about this just takes me away from just whatever's going to happen happens for 60 seconds and then it's over.
That's right. And so the big clue in that is you, right? So the voices of conditioning, of self-hatred, you. Why aren't you this? Why aren't you that? Well, but if you would, then you would. So saran wrap is, again, the image that occurs to me. So you're almost mm-hmm. there, right? You're almost present, but there's that layer of conditioning that is constantly interacting with you rather than you being able to be just present and receptive to life as it unfolds. And that's what you're feeling, and that's that sense of whatever I do is not going to be the right thing according to those voices. But as you stay with your experience, you know, you will be there. You will. You will have direct experience. It's guaranteed.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't have to...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't have to have this dramatic a thing happen to have this experience.
No.
I mean, smaller things happen
not
all the time that I can practice this on, yeah.
That's exactly right. That's yes. Yes. In fact, it's kind of like Michael's kindness, right? As we open ourselves to something, looking at a process like this, life will give us what we ask for, and suddenly it'll just be everywhere. You're seeing it everywhere, how there's that layer between you and an authentic experience of life. And, of course, the way it stays there for everybody is to say, but you can't handle it. It'll be too painful. It'll be too awful. You can't. But when we're actually present, it's none of those things.
Right. Right. I like the saran wrap analogy.
Yeah. 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 Because it's hard to see that we're not completely there. But when what you're doing now is reaching out and you're running into something, and we know what that something is. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also very helpful to have someone else there who is I don't know, normal, whatever you want to call it. So my wife just has the experience, and when I watch her, it's kind of like, it's almost like watching a zoo animal, because I don't really see this. You know, I don't even know what I'm watching. You know what I mean? It's so foreign to me, but it's helpful to see that it's easy for the emotion of grief to erupt for 60 seconds or 2 minutes, and then it's over, and then we bury this animal we loved in the hole, and it's over. You know, she goes on with her business, and
right. Don't let those voices do that to you, Mark. You do absolutely know the experience. You do.
Yes, you're right.
It's not foreign to you at all. You're kept from it, but that doesn't mean, you know, this is, I don't know if this is too out there, but one of my favorite things is if a person were to say, I don't know what the color red is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you actually can't make that statement because you have to know what the color red is to know that you, the correct phrasing would be, I've never seen the color red, right? So uh-huh. If you'd never seen the color red, you wouldn't know that you've never seen the color red. So you can't do that. Right? And so it's the same process. The voices want you to believe that this is an experience you don't have. But you did. You've had it. And I would suggest that you're still having it. It's just happening below the level of that constant conversation about what's going on and how you feel and how you should be and how she is and how you're not and all of that. So as you practice just sitting still with and creating that opening, then at deeper and deeper levels, you're going to be able to get in touch with the authentic experience of the moment, which is what we're going for.
Great. I love it. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Take good care. Stay in touch.
Yes. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mark. Another great conversation, Sherry. A lot of diligent looking.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes. It really is, because that's, of course, that's practice, right? That's what that's what we're required to do. We're told, oh, it's, you know, you can't, and it's awful, and you better not, and all of that. And we just keep showing up. And eventually we get to have the experience that, no, there's nothing wrong. I'm equal to my life. That story is not true. I can be here. And in fact, I want to be here because I want to be alive. And to be alive is to feel and experience all of life.
Mm. Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. Without the saran wrap.
Without the saran wrap. Yeah. Sometimes there are tears. And a lot of times there's laughter, there's enjoyment, there's pleasure, there's disappointment, there's everything that human beings can feel, can experience. And why would we not want to be fully human and fully alive?
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Laura.
Hello, Laura.
Hi, Laura.
Hello. This is super fun to be on.
It's super fun to hear you sounding so well.
It is so much. Wow, the gratitude for health and not coughing.
Nothing like it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that just brings, that's a whole workshop in and of itself. To feel human, right? It was like, yeah. And so, it's just been a complete, you know, it's like sometimes I don't know on what program I've shared and not shared. It's like
right.
That place of home. I don't know where I spoke about this, but I know we talked about it.
That's okay. We are a group of people who, if we weren't okay speaking about the same things over and over and over, we've been doomed long ago. So don't worry about it.
So, I mean, it's just been really beautiful hearing what everybody's talking about it, that same process of watching, I mean, gosh, it doesn't really matter the content, but watching really, well, as closely as I'm able to in any given moment, I'm really paying close attention to, like, what I wake up into and and then I mean, that can be waking up in the morning or waking up at my desk or waking up, right, in a meeting, right, you know. It's, and sometimes I'll have this experience of I'll be going along, wake up, and wake up into saying something that, like, I'm like, question of, like, what, it's almost like I can't believe I'm actually, it's usually with parenting, right? Like, I'm something, you know, I'm my tone of voice, or somewhere in the process, I'll wake up and be like, this isn't actually what I want to be saying or want to be doing. Yeah. Or another process is I'll wake, it's like I feel like I'm really present, and then all of a sudden I can hear the assessment of what ego's saying about what I'm saying, and then self-consciousness happens and I lose my rhythm, or and just watching really how the quality of my life is being determined by what I'm listening to.
So what you're attending to in the form of the conversation that's going on.
Yeah, internally, yeah. That I may not, didn't even know was happening until it's either I've left center and I'm listening to a conversation, or I just kind of even lost it just now. Or
isn't that spooky? Isn't that spooky to come to and realize, wow, I was in another reality, one that doesn't actually exist. Yeah? Just completely caught up in a story, in a whatever it is. And, it, you know, it's thank God you don't snore during those times, right? Because right there you are at work, you're in the meeting, you're with the client or whatever, and you come to. The odds are good the other person doesn't actually know you've been somewhere completely gone. Sometimes they do.
Oh, yeah. Right?
When the person says, are you with me? Oops.
Yeah. And so having been in a place just a couple of weeks ago where, I mean, the darkest of the dark room, right? Whatever, right, the, like, little hole, right, conditioning had me in. And then to be on this other side of being able to have, like, survived it, and nothing circumstantially in my life has changed. That always astounds me.
Yes. 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 And Laura, just to underline that, you know, those Buddhists will say that samsara, the world of, you know, that we think is reality, this world, samsara and nirvana are one. Mm. So people are deeply conditioned that, well, to get to nirvana, you got to get out of this, right? Because this must be hell. And so we're trying to get from hell to heaven. But the point of it is, they're the same thing. Nothing is going to change, which is the experience that you just described. Nothing is any different, only our perception.
It feels like intellectual things that maybe I've been talking about for goodness knows how long, I'm having many experiences of it, and it touches me in a different way, and then I lose it, right? And then the next moment I have an experience of it again, and maybe a little bit deeper, and it's just that, like, whoa, right? Like, gosh, what I don't know that I don't know.
Oh, and isn't that a place of fascination?
Mm.
Yeah, which argues for not having the same conversations in the head, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we get bamboozled into being willing to listen to the same thing in the head over and over, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 times, right? When I know that. I know that story. I know that conversation.
Oh.
I know where that's going.
Yeah.
Okay? What else is possible? If I'm not attending to that, what else is possible?
Yeah. Yeah. So I just want to speak to that place around commitment. Like, I feel like I'm designing my life to have practice commitments kind of surrounding me so that I have anchors that I, right, if I ever drift off too far, there's something that's going to, hold me to this. So,
It's really important. Again, and you know this very well, I know we've had this conversation any number of times, all conditioned roads lead to quit.
Mm.
That's what the campaign always is. Quit that relationship. Quit that job. Quit that practice. Quit meditating. Quit recording and listening. Quit. Right? And there's always a promise that there's going to be something better after you quit. And, of course, there isn't.
Oh.
Right? And yet the campaign is so powerful that almost everybody quits. And when people don't quit, then conditioning tries to get them talked into the big quit. Why don't you just kill yourself? You're never going to get it right. You're never going to be the person you should be. Why don't you just give up completely and kill yourself, and then it'll be what? It's like I don't know that the birds aren't singing out of kindness, right? And we don't know that the big quit is going to produce anything better for us than all those little quits have produced.
Yeah, and when you said to me, whenever I got on the other day, the Project Joy show, I mean, you said a lot, but what just, we come to practice however we are, because I was in a shame attack around, I'm in this really dark place, and I've yelled at my kids, and I've screamed, and I've been, really uncentered. So I was right, but I've been in practice for all of these years, and there was this all of this story, and it just kept me. Yeah, and the power of we show up, that's unconditional love of if I can't show unconditional love for this human being and reach out to the practice that supports.
Isn't it the most marvelous straight shot to humility? Humility and compassion. What a team.
Yes.
Right? It's I am in this pit. I have been practicing for all this time, and I am in this pit. Let me not look at anyone else and say, what is the matter with you?
Amen. Gosh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, just super grateful.
Yeah. And it's the Daruma doll again, right? My current favorite image, right? We get knocked down, we get back up. We get knocked down, we get back up. And if we never don't get back up, we're going to be fine. That's all we got to do is say, "Whoo, got me again. Okay, here I am." That's it.
Yeah.
And we will always be fine.
And Sherry, what I found so amazing is just in the reaching out, in the taking, it's that process of the willingness. I don't know what step it was, but I just, at some point, the relief was there.
Yes.
It was the not giving up. Though it was feeling crappy, at some point, the relief, the embrace, I was able to receive it.
Yes. And again, that's all that's required of us. It's just whenever we come to just say thank you, and And as you say, being able to reach out to people who understand the whole process and aren't going to be judgmental, there's a gift.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we get a little bit closer every time to being able to be that for ourselves and for everyone else. So put that in that list of
there you
gifts.
Go.
Yeah,
yeah,
gifts that we can give to life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Oh, can I say one other thing, Laura? Are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. The one other thing that I want to say, because, of course, what self-hate can do to parents is just bloodier than what it can do to just about anybody, right? Because here you have these sweet children, and you're just destroying their lives because you're such a dark room addict. To me, the greatest gift that we can give to our children is to let them see us go through this. To acknowledge that what I value is being present, and I'm working through everything that's keeping me from being that way. I'm working through the voices. I'm working through the beliefs and assumptions. I'm letting go of all of it. I don't even aspire to being a perfect parent. I just want to be as unconditionally loving as I can be. That's it. So if you notice some imperfections, I've noticed them too. and that's just how it is. Because when they grow up, they're going to be facing the same exact things. And if they've seen somebody go through it ahead of them with courage and humor and willingness and kindness and honesty and humility, then that's what's going to be available to them when it hits them, which it will.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Take care.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. Wow, that was an amazing conversation, Sherry. Amazing.
Did you relate to that, Dad?
Well, I laughed and cried listening to you and Laura talk, so I think it
so
hit
yes.
home. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I've been to all of those places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's what we want for everybody. You know, be authentically who we are, complete with all of our struggles, and recognize the goodness that is behind our efforts, that we're doing the best that we can in each and every moment, and any voice that says we're not is lying. Boom. That's it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and I really appreciated the laughter in there. Really, it just cuts through all of that conditioning. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for this. And
thank you.
I reckon if the good Lord's willing, we'll meet again next week.
Can't wait. Thank you, Sherry.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Go happy. Treasure yourself.
Don't forget to treasure yourself. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.